The following program will make you want to grow things and experience new and wonderful dreams about your plants, garden, and garden design. Listener participation is strongly advised. Good evening and welcome to Down the Garden Path with your host, Joanne Shaw, right here on Reality Radio 101. To contact Joanne live this evening, it's simple, it's easy, it's fun. Email her right now in studio 101 at gmail.com. And now, right to your host of Down the Garden Path, Joanne Shaw.
Thank you, and welcome to Down the Garden Path, where we discuss down-to-earth tips and advice for your plants, gardens, and landscapes. As a fellow gardener, and even more so as a landscape designer, I think it is important and possible to have a great landscapes that are low maintenance. And I do my best each week to bring you interesting and relevant and helpful topics.
I can vouch for that.
Yes. That can help us in our yards and gardens. And definitely the big topic right now as we approach February is seed starting.
Yeah.
And
exciting.
So I'm very excited to welcome back Megan Kane. Megan is the chief gardener over at the Creative Vegetable Gardener. She's a garden educator, writer, and speaker with extensive front and side yard vegetable gardens in the city of Madison, Wisconsin. Megan is setting out to create a legion of gardening addicts that successfully and passionately grow their own food. Through her gardening education business, the Creative Vegetable Gardener, she helps people get more from their gardens by first mastering the essentials and then indulging in the colorful details that make gardening not just a favorite pastime, but a lifestyle. She is now the author of A Smart Start Garden Planner, Your Step-by-Step Guide to a Successful Season. And she's here tonight to tell us all about it. Congratulations on this beautiful book, Megan, and welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back, Joanne.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm so glad you could come back. And you reached out to me because you were so excited about this book, and I love it, I have to say. And as you know, as my listeners know, and I've confessed to you as well, I'm not a seed starter and I'm not a great vegetable gardener. I try, but I have to say that the book has really inspired me. It really has.
Oh, good. That's exactly the goal. I'm happy to hear that.
Oh, good. Now, I'm sure this was a long process and a true labor of love for you. What made you think this is what gardeners like me needed to be successful?
Well, I've been teaching classes for a long time and working with lots of different gardeners. And one thing I've realized over the years is that the most successful gardeners are people who give some thought and do a little bit of planning before the season starts.
Mm-hmm.
They don't wait until the first nice day in spring and then start thinking about their garden and run out to the nursery and throw a bunch of plants and seeds in there in their cart. And then run back home and start planting. They're usually, the most successful people that I've met, including myself, and that's how I garden, is we do a little bit of planning. And also, I think, and I wrote a blog post about this, that I said, if you're not spending some time planning your garden in winter, you're really missing out. Because
mm-hmm.
I think it's the anticipation of the garden season that can be a really sweet part of winter. the looking through the seed catalogs, and I usually get some gardening books from the library. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I spend a little bit of time looking on Pinterest or online. And I feel like this is a time of year where the anticipation starts building, especially for us who live in the northern climate, because mm-hmm. I live in the northern U.S., so
yeah.
Pretty similar to your climate, where we just start to get excited for spring and happy to start thinking about our gardens. And I think garden planning can be a fun part of that anticipation and that preparation.
And you know, that ties in with me, and my motto for my business is a great garden always starts with a plan, with a great plan. So I totally agree with you. And I think sometimes I know my mistakes I've made with vegetables or with growing plants, even from seed, is the what's it called now? That term's gone out of my head. The basically you just rush to do it, like the impulse purchase.
Right.
Yep. You just see a package and this flower or the plant on the package looks great. So you just pick it up and it might not be in the right place or the right spot.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think I even fall victim to that.
Mm-hmm.
But in the book I talk about, and sometimes on my blog and my website and in classes I teach, I talk about recommending that people order seed catalogs or shop for seeds online.
Okay.
Instead of going to a store. Or let's say if you want to support your local nursery, which I think is their garden store, which I think is a great idea, at least have a list of what you want to buy before you go there.
Okay.
And so I kind of do it two different ways. I either shop through the seed catalogs and just order them online, or I shop in the seed catalogs, make my list, and then I go to my local garden stores that I know carry certain seed lines, and then I'll consult my list and then select the seeds.
From there.
But even when I do that, I still end up with things in my basket or my cart that I just can't help but buy.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I wanted to pause for a second and just let our listeners know that if they've got a question for you or a question about your book or a question about growing vegetables, that if they send in a question on email, they can have a chance to win a copy of your book, correct?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Correct.
So I hope we've got some people that have some questions for you out there. So back to the book, I think... one of my favorite parts of the book, and I have several, is your recommendation for that garden reflection, and and I think that really helped me too, because some of those questions, you know, I unfortunately don't see that enjoyment yet because I've had so much challenge in the past of growing vegetables that really what my goals were, you know, I was just going to the nursery and picking up a tomato plant and you know that type of things. But to really sit back and read through all those questions you have listed in your garden reflection section, I think that will really, really help people.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea to think about last year's garden, your successes and things you'd like to do better with and things that you struggled with before you start planning this year's garden, because mm-hmm. I think it can help you think about some intentions, some of the questions I have. So my book is structured kind of like a workbook. So there's lots of pages within the book that are about the reader
mm-hmm.
for you to think about certain things. So this is really about the readers creating their own personalized plan. I can't tell mm-hmm. you what you should grow in your garden,
because yes, yep.
it depends what you like, where you live mm-hmm. and where, what you like to eat and how you grocery shop and just lots of different things about your own personal life. And so that's part of what the garden reflection is. It's a sheet of questions where you think about last year's garden, you describe it in a few words, you think about what did you struggle with, you think about the coming year, is there anything that you're worried about? So just different things like that. So you can just think about what are your intentions going forward. But by first kind of looking backwards and
yeah.
reviewing the year previous.
Yeah. And it's a good time to even note, because sometimes weather, you know, weather changes from year to year, right? And that can kind of impact the garden. So kind of noting, you know, your struggles or your successes and noting that, you know, it was a really hot summer or it was a very wet summer, that type of thing can really help as well.
Right. And I think it's good to remember that no season is there's no such thing as a perfect garden.
Mm-hmm.
There's no such thing as a perfect vegetable garden. There's no such thing as a perfect season. I like to say that there's a little bit of magic involved in growing vegetables, because there's things that maybe you'll do the same thing every year and for some reason one year it doesn't work, or you feel like you're doing everything right when you're trying to grow a certain vegetable, but for some reason something's not working, or you feel like you did something wrong, but then it turns out great. So, you know, when you're doing your reflection, I think it's good to be understanding with yourself and easy on yourself. And it's not about feeling bad about last year. It's just about recognizing what you want to do better. And I think that's one of the gifts of gardening, and it's one of the things that I love. Certainly when you live in a more northern area like we do, where we get a real pause with the garden season, it ends completely, pretty much, and then it begins again in spring. And so spring is a fresh start, and that's part of the gift, is that we get to start all over again and make different mistakes and have different successes with the new year coming up.
Yes, exactly. And part of that, so you have a garden reflection page, and then you talk about your garden vision. So once you've kind of reflected on the past year, then you can also have a vision for the new year. Or let's say you're a brand new gardener and you didn't have a garden last year, right?
Right. Yeah, if you didn't have a garden last year. So really, this book it doesn't tell you how to start a garden.
Mm.
So it's really for people, I would say, probably that have a year or two under their belt.
Okay.
I'm actually hoping to write an e-book just for beginning gardeners, so for people who have never had a garden before. I think potentially, it depends on the kind of person you are, this book could be a little overwhelming if you have never gardened before. Mm. But I think if you have a year or two under your belt, or many years, and I've had a few people got a sneak peek at the book, and there was a few people that have been gardening for a while and said, oh, I read the whole book, and people who have heard me teach and heard me speak before, and they said, when I went through it, it helped me see things with different things with fresh eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think for all of us as gardeners, once we get into gardening, you realize there's no end to things that there are to learn. And
right.
There's so many details, which I think is one thing that makes gardening so rich, is all the tiny little details and how different people do it and just learning about all those things.
Yeah, and as a gardener, sometimes you don't know what you don't know, right?
You
know, like, you know what I mean? You think, oh, because even if you're new to vegetable gardening, let's say, you know, you don't know the questions to ask type of thing. So I think, I have to say it wasn't just a planner for me. It was like a mini course, like a mini education. I really did learn a lot. And like I said, you know, you don't know what you don't know. I love the part when you talked about your sister who asked you about the onions.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite stories. So my sister lived at that time in Philadelphia, so in the city. She actually lived in a row home, so she didn't have any – she just had a little back patio, no grass, no greenery, very urban area, and she decided to try to grow some vegetables. And so she was learning, and it was fascinating for me to just hear the kinds of questions that she would ask, because it really helped me.
Mm-hmm.
And so she called one day and said, so when I plant an onion, how many onions do I get? And then I just thought, wow, that is so interesting that you asked that question. And I realized that as a more experienced gardener, I'm thinking about that things like that, but in a different way.
Mm.
Like I just took it for granted. And so that kind of inspired one of the sections in the book, which is the veggie essentials. So it's all about getting to know the different characteristics of vegetables so that you can decide whether you think it's worth it to grow it in your garden or not. So for example, you plant one onion, you get one onion.
Mm-hmm.
You plant a kale plant. Here in Madison, I plant it in mid to late April, and I can harvest from that kale plant from April all the way till past frost into October and possibly even November. And from the same plant, I can continue to harvest kale because it'll continue to put on new leaves. And so that those are two different categories. So something that you just plant once and you harvest once, and then there, kale would be an example of something you plant once and then you can harvest it for a long time.
Yeah, great example.
And
I was actually on a walk today and I was mentioning this to two ladies I was walking with about the onion. And they both were like, really? You only get one onion? And it's just funny because I think, you know, especially someone with gardening experience, it almost, I'm almost embarrassed to ask those questions. You know, I'm embarrassed to ask. I mean, broccoli was also another example. Like, I'm like, is it like lettuce? In my mind, it's like lettuce. So you would just keep harvesting the flowers and that, but that's not the case, right? So, so there's a lot to know.
Exactly. So broccoli is one of those things where like, yeah, you're never going to get, you're only ever going to get one big head of broccoli. You can, some varieties produce side shoots, so you could get little baby broccolis, but yeah, I think you're right, and I think it's not until people plant some of those things in their garden that they say, oh, I didn't know that cabbage, you only get one cabbage, I totally wouldn't plant it again because it takes up too much room or whatever.
Right.
And so actually the end of that conversation with my sister, when I said, oh, you only get, you plant one onion, you get one onion. And she said, oh, well, I'm not going to plant them then. Because she didn't have that much room. And she said, well, I'm not going to waste my time on things that I only get one of.
Right.
Now, that being said, that's a totally personal decision.
Mm-hmm.
I love growing onions and I have a bigger garden, and I usually grow 300 to 500 onions in my garden, and a lot of people might say, you know, onions are really inexpensive at the store, so it's not worth it to grow them, and that's true. They are pretty cheap to buy at the grocery store, but I don't know, there's just something I really love about growing them, and so they always make it onto my personal garden plan, but that might not be true of another gardener.
Right. But I think the book is full of those tips and of questions that I think many people just don't know how to ask or just always wondered about, and that information might not be on the seed package, right? Or it might not be clearly stated. So I think you really have done a wonderful job of listing all that out and kind of really explaining it to people. I know you said it's not necessarily a book for beginner gardeners, but I think it is in the sense of just helping educate the knowledge of vegetable plants. And it's amazing how we can get as old as we are and eat this food our whole lives, but not really know how it's grown, really.
I grew up in an urban area and I didn't know anyone who gardened, that we actually didn't really eat many vegetables growing up. And it's not until I was in my mid-20s, I moved to a farm to have an internship and learn how to garden. And that's what kind of blew my mind. I had never thought about how any of this food was grown. It was just like these mini revelations. I was like, oh my gosh, so an eggplant grows like that from a plant. It just hangs down from the plant, or like a broccoli comes out from the middle of the stem. And I just thought, wow, it's so crazy when you see these things in the grocery store, and you have, you know, if you're not a gardener or you didn't grow up on a farm, you have really no concept of what the plant looks like or how things are grown. So yeah, it kind of just blew my mind when I first started gardening.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it's really good information to know how much food will you harvest from each plant. Is it really clear on the seed packages, do you think, or in the seed catalogs?
No, not really. I think it's something that's just taken for granted that I feel like you kind of have to figure it out on your own. Nothing that really says, okay, when you plant green beans, once they start producing, you'll come back every few days and continue to harvest green beans, but probably only for 2 or 3 weeks, because then the plant comes to its natural end of its life cycle and it stops producing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, there's nowhere that really says that. And so you might plant a whole bed of beans get tons of beans, but you're only going to get tons of beans for 2 or 3 weeks, and then they're going to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if you're somebody that likes lots of beans and you want beans for many weeks, then, and I don't really talk about this in the book, we talk about it a little bit, but you could plant beans several times throughout the season because you would know, well, I'm only going to get them for 2 or 3 weeks.
Right.
So if I plant bean seed every 2 or 3 weeks, then I'll have a more continued harvest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think maybe early on gardening, like when those seed catalogs and seed packages were designed, I think they may have assumed that, you know, we learned because our mom, you know, we went out to the garden because our mom told us to harvest, you know what I mean, to do it. And so we learned that way. But that's not always the case, right? Some people are new to it or have parents who didn't do it. Or like you said, grow up in urban and decide to, and now there's urban gardens everywhere. So I think your book has done a really great job of explaining those basics, really, as far as growing vegetables go.
Yeah, I think you're right. And even in I live in Wisconsin, and it's a pretty agricultural state, and so a lot of people grew up, you know, I think a lot of people, it's like their grandparents had a farm, mm-hmm. and so they were around gardening, but I hear from a lot of people that never really learned how to do it themselves.
Yeah.
And now they're interested in doing it, and they kind of just, like you said, helped their grandparents or their parents pick things, but didn't really absorb a lot of the knowledge or how to actually garden.
Yeah. And when you're doing your education classes, do you find there that people do have kind of those preconceived notions or little things that they were afraid to ask? You know, like the broccoli, you know, the fact that the broccoli isn't in the center, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah, I think sometimes people don't even think about that.
Mm.
That, you know, you don't really think about it until you plant it and then you harvest it and then you're not sure, like, is it going to grow another one or not?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
I definitely in my class, yeah, I mean, I think there's always people that think like, oh, I have kind of a dumb question. And
mm-hmm.
A lot of my neighbors and friends and, you know, everybody knows that I garden. So a lot of times people will come up and say, do you mind if I ask you a question? This might sound stupid, but... And I always say, there's no such thing as a stupid question in gardening, because if you don't have a lot of experience, there's no way that you could know some of these answers.
Yeah. Yep.
And some of these things that, you know, I was able to write this book because I have many, many years of garden experience and I've taught gardening. And, you know, this is like, it took me a long time to learn about this stuff. And then to finally figure out, like, okay, how can I explain this? These are a lot of things that I think about in my head.
Right.
And I think a lot of experienced gardeners and farmers think about in their heads. But I felt like a lot of this stuff wasn't really written down anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It was, like, just things that you learn as
yeah.
you garden for many years.
Yes. Now, speaking of the book, we do have a question from Nan. She's saying it's a very interesting show, and she's wondering where she could purchase your book.
Sure. Well, thanks, Nan. You can, right now it's for sale on my website, which is creativevegetablegardener.com. And then it's /smart and then -planning, because my website always puts a dash in there. So
okay.
creativevegetablegardener.com/smart-planning. And then I have, I did actually just change my shipping stuff, so I can ship to folks in Canada, or you can just order the ebook. So you can get the ebook, which is basically just a PDF copy mm-hmm. of the print book. So exactly the same, except we changed all the worksheets so that you can type right into them if you would rather type on the computer instead of writing. And then we changed all the links so that they are live links that go to whatever's. If you look at the book, you'll see there's lots of different links in there. And so the live links will take you right to the link in the ebook.
Wow.
And then there's a print book. And then actually some people actually buy, I have a bundle where you can buy the print book and the ebook together. And some people are doing that as well, because I think they like to have both copies.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. Because yeah, having the ebook on your iPad or something like that might be handy, right?
Yeah, I think it just depends how people like to read. I know some people really like reading on their iPads, reading electronic copies, and some
yeah.
people just like to have the actual book in their hands.
Yeah.
I kind of do a little bit of both. I'm a big library patron, so I often have lots of piles of books around my house, but I also tend to buy e-books as well mm-hmm. for things that I want to read about.
Yeah, I do both as well. Although I'm not as good with the library. My husband is, but I tend to be a bit more of a impulse purchaser when it comes to books. So then I'm buying them. So I think that's great. So that's good. So she said thank you very much. So please check out Megan's website. I keep bringing up, you know, I'm not really a seed starter with a lot of experience, but I do know that, you know, I'm overwhelmed when I walk into a nursery with plants, and I kind of get that same feeling when with those seed catalogs. Like, they can also be very overwhelming. I know you said it's probably easier than going to a store, but how do you kind of navigate? I mean, you've done a great job of, you've got some choice or some charts in your book that kind of explain what some of the terminology are on the seed packages.
Yeah, and then I also have at the back of the book is a table called the Veggie Essentials Cheat Sheet. So a lot of the information in the book I tried to put in a table about each vegetable. So how many days until you get a harvest, how much food could you expect to harvest. And one of those columns is recommended varieties. And since we live in a somewhat similar climate, mm-hmm. so it kind of depends where you live. You know, if you live in Florida in the U.S. or somewhere that's really a tropical area, or we might have different varieties that work best for us. But if you live anywhere that's pretty much like you have winter, spring, summer, yeah. and fall, a lot of the varieties, you know, I think for a lot of Canada, a lot of the varieties that I use would probably work pretty well.
Okay.
So I have recommended varieties that work well for me. I often recommend, so if you're a seed starter, you're gonna have to buy seeds so that right. you can start them. It's always a great idea to talk to other gardeners in your community mm-hmm. to see what vegetable varieties are working well for them. But I do agree, because I sat down a couple weeks ago with my seed catalogs and I started to look through them, and I just thought, oh, I'm starting to get overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I actually did is went back and worked through them vegetable by vegetable.
Okay.
So I said, okay, I'm just going to start with tomatoes. Mm-hmm. And then I looked through my tomato seeds that I have. And so you always want to do that. And then I threw out anything that was old. So I usually get rid of things that are three. It depends on how you store your seeds and what particular seed it is, but
okay.
in general, 2-3 years. So I get rid of anything that's older than 3 years.
Okay.
And then I just looked at all the tomato listings in the seed catalogs that I had. So I tend to, I get a lot of seed catalogs in the mail, I think, because your name gets sold to other seed catalogs, but I kind of have my three or four favorites. And so I just focused on those catalogs, and I would just look at tomatoes and just kind of see what tomatoes do they all have. Is there anything else that I want to try? And then I would just write it down on my list.
Okay.
And then I would move to broccoli and then say, okay, what broccoli do I have? You know, what broccoli do they have? Is there anything new I want to try? No, I'm happy with the broccoli packets that I already have. I don't grow that much broccoli. I'm not going to order broccoli.
Okay.
And so I actually felt like that was a little bit more helpful this year, because I agree. Even I get overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I talk about in the book is I really encourage people to keep records so that over time you can start to get familiar with the vegetable varieties that work well in your own garden.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what happened to me in the past is that I would just buy stuff from the nursery, buy seed packets. I would plant them. Sometimes I'd stick the seed packet out in the garden, or I'd stick the tag, and then by the end of the year, it'd be gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know I have no idea what happened to it. And then I don't know what I planted. And either I really liked it, but I don't know what it was, so I can't plant it again, or I didn't like it, or it didn't perform well, and I don't want to plant it again, but I have no idea what it is, so I can't avoid it in the future. And so for me, that's how I've gotten familiar, and I kind of have a list of, okay, these are the varieties that I always plant every year.
Okay.
They're reliable.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that perform well in my garden. And then, so they kind of serve as the foundation of my garden. And then I layer on things that look fun or look interesting or something new I want to try. But I always have that foundation of, okay, these are the varieties that I know work very well.
Right.
I also wrote a blog post this week, actually just today, where I talked about how many varieties should you plant?
Oh,
how
yeah.
How many different varieties mm-hmm. should you plant in your garden? And that was prompted by somebody who asked me to look at their garden plan, and she was planting, and she's a new gardener, and she was going to plant 10 tomatoes, and she had 5 each of 2 different varieties.
Okay.
And then she had like 8 cucumbers, all of 1 or 2 different varieties.
Okay.
And so I wrote to her and I said, you know, I don't recommend, especially as a new gardener, I wouldn't put all your eggs in one basket.
Oh, okay.
I wouldn't plant, if you're going to plant 10 tomatoes, I don't know that I'd plant only 1 or 2 varieties.
Okay.
I would plant 3 or 4.
Okay, but not 10 different varieties. Like you would still...
Yeah, of different varieties.
Right.
Exactly. Because when you can judge varieties against each other, that really helps you start to figure out what is working.
Okay.
So, for example, in my garden, I love spinach, and I plant a lot of spinach. And I usually plant several different varieties because I'm always looking for my favorite varieties.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed over time that Bloomsdale, which is a very popular spinach variety, would always be the first one to bolt, which means sending up a flower.
Okay.
And then it gets bitter and you can't really eat it anymore. So it would bolt in the spring before any other variety of spinach that I was growing. And I knew that because I kept records.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew, what is this that's bolting first? And
yeah.
I said, oh, it's Bloomsdale. And then I decided I'm not growing Bloomsdale anymore. It's a great old variety, but in my garden, it bolts so quickly in the spring that I barely get time to harvest it. And then I had all these other ones that would last weeks longer than that variety. And so I think that's one of the benefits of growing several different varieties of the same vegetable in your garden if you have room.
Mm-hmm.
Because then that really helps you compare the differences between the two. Does one get a disease and one doesn't?
Mm.
Or one is susceptible to insects and the other one isn't. One produces more or earlier or later, or whatever you're looking for in whatever vegetable you're growing.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I can definitely see it just makes it much easier to compare. But it's harder to choose how many, you know, like you said, if you're growing 10 tomato plants, you don't want to grow 10 different ones. You kind of have to balance that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably not. I mean, you could, but
yeah.
That's the hard part is because seeds your seed order can add up.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a lot of extra seeds. So that is a great reason to, if you have some friends that are gardeners, you could do a seed swap. Because if you actually like the idea of, oh, I think it actually would be fun to grow 10 different tomatoes, but I don't really want 10 different seed packets of tomatoes with 25 seeds in them each. I have a friend that I usually get together with and we just spread out all our seeds and then we just take a few.
Oh, okay.
If there's anything that looks interesting, then
yeah.
We just take some from the other person's packet. And so that's always a good way to try a few new varieties if you can get some friends to give you a few seeds. Because most people have, certainly for things like tomatoes and peppers, a lot of people have more seeds than they can use.
Yes.
So are always happy to share.
Okay. Let's just go back to, you'd mentioned about storing your seeds. So do you store them in the little seed packages? And if so, do you also write, because you said also about the date, do you write when you get them, do you write the year on the package?
Well, that's a great question. They actually already have the year on them.
Oh.
When you buy the seed packets, you should be able to check the date that they're, so a lot of times it says packed for 2016
okay.
or 2014. And so that's how I know when I've gotten them. So when
okay.
I'm before, like I said, before I order, I go through my seeds and I get rid of anything that's older. Because things could still potentially germinate if they're older. But I don't know. I feel like seeds are so inexpensive
mm-hmm.
that really, like a pack of seeds is $3, that I don't want to waste time. You know, it might take me 2 to 3 weeks until I figure out something's not going to germinate because
yeah.
it's too old. Like, say, I plant beets in my garden, and it takes me 2 weeks to figure out, oh, they didn't germinate. And then I have to go and get another packet and replant, and I've lost 3 weeks, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I live in a pretty short season area, just like you.
Yeah.
So I don't really want to waste 3 weeks trying to wait for something to germinate. So I kind of always err on the side of just buying new seeds.
Okay.
And then, yeah, because, you know, it's worth it for me to be confident that they're most likely going to germinate because I have newer seeds.
Yeah, I could see that for sure. And that's neat. I did not know that they came on, that the year was on the package. So that's good. Like a little expiry date or like with our food. So that's good.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent. You also do a good job. You know, you're talking about when to start seeds, but the information you laid out in what season will you get a harvest, and also when, because I think, everybody thinks, we plant our vegetables, you know, the May long weekend, and then we harvest in August, September, that type, right? And we really see, and I know I'm guilty of it myself, you really see vegetable gardening as a summer garden. But really, you talk about that really it's, you know, there's planting for spring, summer, and fall. And by breaking in, you know, not only is that by scheduling your time, but also the different vegetables, you've broken it up into the three as well.
Right. I think you hit the nail on the head. A lot of people that I've met that say, oh, I just plant my whole garden, like right around Memorial Day, and then I'm done.
Yeah.
So I've run into people that say, like, oh, my garden's planted. Okay, I'm done.
Yeah.
And I always laugh because I think, wow, if you wait until you're, and they do that because it's after the last frost.
That's right.
And so you know that you're safe.
Mm-hmm.
But if you wait until after your last frost to start planting in your garden, you've missed out on a whole season of food, which is the spring season. And which for many of us is we're just starving for, I know myself, by the time April comes, I so want to be harvesting out of my garden as quickly as possible. I don't want to wait until August. Oh my gosh, that sounds so painful.
Yeah.
And so I think for me, just like if you think about in the ornamental garden, I feel like the spring bulbs are the ones that are so, so exciting and so beautiful and just, you know, I always think like, oh, there's never such thing as too many bulbs in the spring after a long winter. And I feel that way about my spring vegetable garden. That's like, I want food and I want it quick. and so there's a lot of things that you can plant. Our last frost in Madison is usually somewhere around Mother's Day. In the U.S. is like the second weekend in May.
Yeah. Okay. It's pretty close to ours. Yeah.
Yeah, so I actually start planting in my garden in mid-April.
Okay, right into the garden, though. So now we're not talking about seeds in your house. We're talking about you're putting seeds right in the garden in April.
Exactly, yep. So usually about mid-April, because there's a lot of things that are cold hardy.
Okay.
So things like spinach and lettuce and cabbage and kale and broccoli, they don't really mind if it's going to get down below 32. And in fact, they thrive in the cooler weather. And so a very common thing that I hear people ask me is, oh, I try to grow spinach, but I never have much luck.
Oh, okay.
And I always ask, well, when do you plant it?
Okay.
And then some people say, oh, I plant it in like mid-May.
All right.
Like, well, that's way too late because it doesn't like hot weather. And by the time it germinates and starts growing, it's going to be June. And then here is kind of when it starts to get hot and the summer starts. And so if you plant it in mid-April or the third week in April, you're going to have a way better chance of getting spinach. And you're going to have a longer harvest because it's going to do really well because of that cool weather.
Okay.
And so I usually start planting outside of my garden about mid-April, and I continue to plant all the way until almost pretty much September.
Really?
And not every day and
right.
not every week. But
yeah.
when I have some space open up, I'll plant something new. And I like, you know, I'll plant for spring, summer, and fall.
Okay.
And so I'm actually, I harvested from my garden, I harvested carrots on December 6th.
Wow.
Last year. And I harvested spinach after that, actually.
Okay.
And so, there's definitely ways that you can extend the harvest season, and I feel like we put a lot of work into our gardens. It's joyful work, but it's still work, and so why not get food for as much of the year as possible? And that means start planting early and then continue planting if you have room. Sometimes in my garden, I get two crops out of the same bed.
Okay.
So when I empty something out, I immediately replant it with something else. And so then just filling in those holes and continuing to plant if you can all season. Now, if you have a really small garden, sometimes that's difficult. And
Right. It
depends what you plant, because some things stay in the garden for quite a long time.
Yeah.
But that's the nice thing about planting a spring round of crops, because then they're done
Yes. By
the time we get into the heat of summer, and then you can plant something for fall.
Right. Okay. Well, I think, I mean, nobody knows. I mean, I've never seen all that information all in one place. So I think that you've just really done a great job in explaining all that. And I think I see here the page, you know, quick to harvest the short season vegetables, and really having people look at the big picture, because everybody's so focused on the one season type of thing. So right. In addition to planting seeds right in the garden, do you start seeds indoors? Because we have Teresa who's asking about what is the very best way to start seeds indoors.
Yeah, I do. And I would say it goes along with garden planning, where it's so fun. I think it's so fun to start seeds because I feel like I get to start the garden season early.
Okay.
I usually begin starting seeds about right at the end of February, which is when I'm really starting to get itchy. But I know I still have 6 weeks or so until I can really get into the garden and start planting. So I'm like, okay, the garden season's starting. I'm starting my seeds. Most people start onions and leeks are kind of usually the first things that you start, because they're also some of the first things you can put into the garden.
Okay.
So I start with my garden, leeks and onions. And so I think one of the common mistakes that people make with seed starting is that they try to grow them in front of a window.
Oh.
And you can't really start seeds in front of a window because they need overhead light.
Okay.
And if you start them in front of the window, I think a common experience is that they get really leggy, which means they get really tall and skinny, and because they're reaching, they're not getting enough light, even if you put them in a south-facing window.
Okay.
And so I have a seed starting rack that I actually have a blog post. If you search on my website, it will probably pop up seed starting rack, where I have a blog post where I talk about my rack, and it's really just a wire rack that I bought from a store, and then I have some lights and I have some chains and some little S hooks where I just assembled my own
from
very easy to get material.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's probably my biggest tip, is that you need some kind of overhead light, and it doesn't have to be a fancy grow light.
Okay.
I actually just use shop lights.
Oh, all right.
That I got from just like a home improvement store with just a regular fluorescent bulbs in them.
Okay.
So no
having to go to a specialty store or a big investment. You can really do it. Yeah, good to know, Teresa. I hope that helps. But I think that may go back to when I used to try seeds. I was always they were always leggy and falling over. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are there things that you only can do? Like you always only do the onions inside and leeks inside, or do you start some of those outside as well?
I'll direct seed scallions.
Okay.
Because they're pretty quick.
Yeah.
Or not quick, but I'll usually start some inside for a faster harvest in spring, and then I'll seed some throughout the season to keep them going. In a short season area like mine, you definitely want to start your onions, either buy onion plants or start onions ahead of time, because they're very daylight sensitive, and so you want to get them started as soon as possible. You don't want to wait for them to germinate and start growing, because they might not get very big.
Okay.
Because you harvest them in July. They grow pretty quick, and then they're done. They really start putting out a bulb. They start bulbing up, so creating their bulb around the solstice. So it's like whatever greenery you have on the plant at around the solstice is feeding the bulb.
Oh.
So if you have a really tiny green part to your onion, you're not going to get a very big
bulb.
So onions, that's definitely one that people struggle with for sure, and getting them out as soon as possible in the spring. And if you can start your own, I've had the best luck with starting my own onions, better than buying sets for plants. There's some things, and actually there is a section in the book where I talk about direct seed versus transplant. Mm-hmm. So things that you're just going to plant the seed right into the garden.
Yeah.
And then things that you want to make sure you have a plant. So either, and then you're either going to start the plant yourself, but if you don't like the idea of seed starting and it doesn't seem fun to you, then definitely don't do it.
Yeah.
You could just buy seedlings, or if you have a really small garden and you don't think it's worth it, you can buy seedlings in the spring. That's totally fine. And I actually supplement some of my seedlings because there's a few things I don't grow that many of. So I just buy from the farmer's market.
Okay.
And then I talk about that in the book as well, that really the best place to buy plants is your local farmer's market, mm-hmm. from farmers who are growing those exact same vegetables.
Yeah.
Which is often CSA farmers. Those are my favorite people to buy seedlings from, because I know that CSA farmers are very serious about mm-hmm. what they grow, because it's their business.
Yeah.
And they need their vegetable plants to perform well, and especially if it's an organic seed CSA, because they can't rely on chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are some things you can do as an organic farmer, but so there, I've worked on a few CSA farms and they're constantly evaluating varieties and trying to find the best varieties and the tastiest varieties. And so I go right to the CSA farmers and that's where I buy my seedlings, because I know they're very knowledgeable. You can ask mm-hmm. them all kinds of questions. You could ask, okay, what are the peppers that your members love?
Yeah.
You know, what is the best tomato for making sauce? Like, they should be very knowledgeable about all the varieties that they're growing.
I never even thought of that, about checking with the farmer's market. So that was a great tip in the book. I love that you mentioned not to necessarily buy from the big box stores.
No, that's the worst place to buy seedlings, because certainly, at least here in the U.S., like, sometimes they're shipping things up from Texas.
Yeah.
And a lot of times if I go to the big box store, I usually look and see what kind of vegetables are they selling. And a lot of times the varieties, I'm like, I never heard of that variety.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would not buy that. Who knows if you can actually grow it in Wisconsin? Like, who's picking these varieties?
Yeah.
Are they just sending the exact same varieties to every single big box store in the entire United States? Because something that grows well in Texas is not necessarily going to grow well in Wisconsin. It's two very different gardening worlds.
Right.
And so, I would definitely shop locally, ask lots of questions, mm-hmm. ask for suggestions. And if the person doesn't know the answers, go to the next stand.
Yeah, next place. Okay.
Because it means that they're not. My brother had that experience in D.C. where he said, which ones are indeterminate and which ones are determinate, when he was buying tomatoes and the person didn't know. And I would say, I wouldn't buy seedlings from them.
Yeah.
Them because they're not growing any of these varieties.
Right.
They don't necessarily know if they grow well in your area.
Right. Okay. Before we wrap up, I did want to go back. We touched on it in the beginning as far as the planning and how important the planning is to your success. And you've got a really good chapter about planning in your book as well, when you talk about creating not only planning and keeping records, but creating an actual garden map.
Yeah. So back to what we were talking about, when you just stick the packets or the little tags, if you buy seedlings in your garden and then they fade, or I always feel like the garden gnomes come and steal them and then they're all gone by the end of the season. One year I thought, this is the definition of insanity. I'm doing the same thing over and over, mm-hmm. and it's not working because I keep losing track of my varieties. What should I do? And then I thought, I should make a garden map. And so a garden map can be very simple. All I did that day was just go to my printer, grab a blank piece of paper, and I just drew a map of my garden. I made a bunch of copies, and then I had all these copies, and mm-hmm. then I thought, where should I put this? And I thought, I should make a garden binder. And so I dug out an old binder, I put my map in there, I wrote the year on the top, and then I started to keep track of what I was planting. And really, all I do is write the date, the variety, and then sometimes I'll do how many I planted so that I can keep track of the amounts in case I want to tweak that from year to year.
Okay. And you have to, you should plant different plants in different spots from year to year as well, that rotation. So the plan would help with that too. The map would help with knowing, okay, I can't put carrots back in this spot. I need to put them over there.
Exactly. And that's something that I don't cover rotation in the book. I have enough material that I could easily write another book. So this is really just about planning.
Yes.
And I hope at some point to write another book about that picks up in the garden. But yeah, ideally you're not planting the same, and actually you're not planting the same family in the same spot year after year.
Okay.
And so you're not planting the tomato, the Solanaceae family, which is tomatoes, peppers, tomatillos, eggplant, potatoes. Ideally, you're not planting anything in that family in the same spot year after year.
Okay.
But when you have a small garden, it's difficult to rotate.
Yeah. But it's also difficult to remember from year to year. So if you start out with this, you know, Megan does a great job in her book in explaining how to tackle it with the garden map. And so it's definitely, has definite lots of purposes, you know, for helping you.
Yeah, as I get older, I really can't remember year to year where I plant everything.
I know for sure. I mean, I always encourage my clients to take photos too. So that's another thing that you could add to your map or add to your binder is to take photos of the garden. That sometimes helps you remember too, right?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I do a lot of photography in my garden. I do the exact same thing. I actually went back recently and was like, what did I plant in that one bed? And I looked at the photo and I was like, oh, yeah, I know, I remember.
Excellent. So your book, I'm going to read the title again, is A Smart Start Garden Planner, Your Step-by-Step Guide to a Successful Season. And it's available on your website. Do you want to give us that address again?
Sure. It's creativevegetablegardener.com. And then you should be able to find the book once you're on the website, but it's /smart and then /planning.
Okay. Excellent. And we do have Scott has written in and he's asked if you've written any other books and if they could still purchase them.
Yeah, great question. I have one other print book, but it's also an ebook or a print book, which is Super Easy Food Preserving, all about how to, the quickest ways to preserve food. So not necessarily canning. I actually use my fridge and my freezer and I store some things fresh in my basement and around my house.
Okay.
And then I also have a bunch of smaller ebooks, one about growing onions, one about growing peppers, one about growing garlic, kind of delving in a little bit more deeply about how to grow those things successfully, because those are three vegetables that I often hear people have problems with and kind of want to grow better.
Okay.
And then I have a couple of little recipe guides where I compiled some of my favorite recipes from the garden. If you go to my website, I have a page that says shop, and then that'll kind of shows you all the different books and things that I have on my website. So,
excellent.
Yeah, thanks for asking.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for that message, Scott. And so time flies when you're having fun. And
I know.
Is there anything else you'd like to share or promote or to tell us about as we sign off?
Well, I do have a free Facebook group. If folks are on Facebook, and I'm going to be hosting a planning party in that Facebook group starting February 8th.
Okay.
You don't have to have a copy of the book. We'll certainly be talking a little bit about the book, but it's just going to be a fun way to meet a bunch of gardeners from all over the world, really. We have people from all over the world in that group, and we'll be sharing photos of our gardens and people sharing favorite varieties and maybe sharing some tips about planning. So
check you out on your Facebook page.
I have a link. I should actually put a link on the sales page of my book so that people can find it.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of what's the easiest way.
People can go to Facebook.
If you sign up for my email list, which is on my website, it's very easy to sign up for an email list. I'm going to be sending out emails about the planning party with the link where you can request to join the Facebook group.
Perfect.
And so that's probably the easiest way. Or send me a note and I'll send you the link.
Okay. Excellent. Yeah, all your contact information is there on your website. So thank you. So I hope our listeners will check out your website, which is also beautiful, and the book is equally as beautiful. And I can tell you took a lot of these photos yourself too, didn't you?
I did. Yeah. I spend a lot of time. It's kind of something that I've picked up recently is taking lots of photos in my garden. And a few were taken by my husband, and then a few by a friend who's a photographer. So most of the pictures of me are taken by a photographer friend.
Oh, okay.
But most of the other ones are taken by me.
Oh, excellent. Well, thank you so much, Megan, for joining me once again here on Down the Garden Path and sharing all your tips and tricks and all this little education course, I think, in your Smart Start Garden Planner. So thank you very much for joining me and sharing all of this with my listeners.
Thanks for having me. Happy garden planning, everybody.
Thank you. You too. Bye for now.
Bye.
Well, there you have it, everyone. I hope that all this media and all the news talking about seed starting in February. So don't get too ahead of yourself, but please consider picking up one of Megan's books, and it will definitely make you smarter as you plan your garden. Thank you once again for joining me on Reality Radio 101 here on Down the Garden Path. Bye for now.
You have been listening to Down the Garden Path with your host, Joanne Shaw, right here on Reality Radio 101.